Welcome to Think Deeper Podcast. Jack Wilkie here, joined by Joe Wilkie and Will Harib. We are presented by Focus Press. This week, we are talking about the story of the week. If you're watching us on live, the fellas just previewed it for you a little bit about the Lindsey Clancy case, a very tragic case that has kind of taken over social media of a mom who killed her children, and the case that's unfolding and the dad's involvement and accusations and allegations, but really not just that, but what has come of it. It's not just a case in itself of a woman killing her children, but I think it's $1 million+ GoFundMe has been raised in for her and her family, her parents, I guess, in response to this. There are TikTok views or videos going mega viral explaining how maybe it was actually the husband's fault and things are not adding up and kind of the internet sleuthing thing. And it's become this massive story, and women, a lot of women kind of siding with her, saying, you know, we all could be that, and a very gruesome story. I don't know what other details you guys want to add to it, but that is, it's been very strange to watch it unfold, especially this last week.
I think it's, I'll just go and kind of share. I think it's important for anybody who might not be familiar. You might have maybe heard the name or stumbled across an article or something on social media, but not super familiar. Briefly, I think it might be valuable, Joe, and you can fill in the gaps for me, to at least for us to go over the details that are kind of undisputed. Lindsey Clancy, I think it was January of 2023, took, and preface this with, we should have done at the start, if you are somebody who listens to this with your kids in the car, this might be one to pause and resume later on when you don't have young ears around, is obviously be some sensitive topics, some sensitive words that are used, but... as far as details about this go, once again, pretty undisputed that Lindsey Clancy, right around 5 p.m. or so, she had her children at home with her. She sent her husband Patrick out to CVS to pick up something or other, and then to a restaurant to pick up takeout. And there's video footage of him doing that, just that. And while he was away, she took her three children down to the basement, one age five, one age three, and one in 8 months. And strangled them, all three of them. And yeah, just absolutely disturbing to think about. She then slashed her wrists and then jumped out of the second story window into the snow, which did not kill her, obviously, but it did leave her paralyzed. Her husband, Patrick, then returned, found her, apparently heard from her that the kids were in the basement. He went down, just awful to think about, discovered them, and then called 911, and that's pretty much everything that has been kind of the short version of it. Joe, any details to fill in there? That's all pretty common knowledge at this point.
Yeah, he was on the call with 911. He had stayed on the call. He had let his wife, made sure the paramedics were there. She was stable, then went down and found them. Apparently, the phone call was so disturbing they wouldn't play it in court, or they won't release it to the public, because on the call, he finds the kids. And, I mean, it gives you chills. Like, it is as disturbing of a case as you're going to find. And, yeah, I mean, I was reading up on the case a lot more today, obviously, in preparations. We were talking about it. I knew of it. I've been seeing a lot of takes back and forth. But I thought, man, I just need to pull away from all this and you know, not a take per se. A lot of different things being said. But what are the facts? And she had been struggling with postpartum psychosis or postpartum depression for a while. I believe her son was, or her youngest child was 9 months old. And so she'd been struggling with it, I think going back to like November, maybe October, they had said as it got toward the fall. So a while is relative, but still 3-4 months of pretty consistent negative thought patterns and depression and just this postpartum struggle that she had. And so in that time, she did seek mental health counseling. You know, she had gone to these, even staying in these holds, these places where they hold you for a certain number of hours and going to these hospitals and such, trying to get placed on psychiatric hold due to her suicidal ideation. And they had tried her on a bunch of different medications, trying to help her. She was having problems with sleeping. She was having all sorts of things that were just not going well. And the husband, best I can tell, was very supportive in trying to get her the help. And so, and then even in January, she'd gone and been on a been in a hospital for a short time. She released herself, it's my understanding, in early January. And they had gone on a vacation. They'd had some days at the park. They actually said that things were actually, that like they were going better. They were going well when this happened. And So yeah, the prosecution is looking for a first degree, saying that, hey, she had the husband leave the house. It seems this was very premeditated.
It was premeditated, right? Yeah,
and you know the defense is going for the insanity plea. They do not disagree that she killed the children, but they are saying that, or they're going for the insanity plea.
No criminal responsibility, right?
Exactly, due to her postpartum psychosis. Well, this obviously has sparked a huge debate online. And this is where a lot of the millions, I just had it pulled up on the GoFundMe, and it's right now, I thought I had seen a million earlier, it's 952,683. So we are, you know, just short of $1 million being raised. And a lot of the comments
for specifically Lindsay, right?
Yeah, and her parents and helping with the, you know, with the trial.
Legal, sure.
So the Musgroves will control the funds, determine how they are used for the purposes described above. I'm talking about they love their daughter, and there's just a huge financial burden to the parents and to everything else. And so a lot of it underneath, though, is it's more of the comments that you see, which is so much support for her. I've struggled with postpartum depression, even guys saying they've struggled with their own mental health. Those are the top two comments right now, as you see, the most recent. All of these talking about she's a beautiful person, mother, daughter, and now a friend to all of us. And we're talking about somebody who killed three of her children. And so when you're reading, we see you waking up, Lindsay, you're a beautiful person, mother, daughter, and now a friend. This is why we thought, man, this is probably something worth talking about, because we know people go through struggles. We know that these things are very real, postpartum and things along those lines. How should the church respond? What do we give a pass to? You know, those are some of the questions I think that we need to get into.
For sure. And it's good to have a therapist on the episode, because the postpartum depression, that's not going to be most of our discussion here, but I think that is where I'm seeing some of the discussion is people immediately going, hey, this is very real. No, we're not saying it's not real. And we're not saying this is not a very difficult thing to deal with. Joe, again, this is your profession. You've dealt with women who are struggling with this. Like, this is something you're familiar with. And so we wanted to get you talking about that a little bit, but as I said, we're not going to spend a lot of time on the reality of postpartum depression, but it is a real thing. It's a difficult thing, but that has almost like overshadowed or just changed the discussion to she had that, therefore nobody can judge. And like, well, no, that's a little bit of an overreaction. So if you would talk a little bit about your understanding, your familiarity with it, and that it is a very real thing, while it's not the past that it's being made to be. One of the other things is postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis, I guess. Difference in terminology that's coming out here.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Joe. Psychosis is basically, that's where the like voices in her head thing came in, the hallucinations, whereas postpartum depression is a few steps before that, basically.
Which, my understanding in her case, she did not actually mention voices in her head until after she had done it. But they still are claiming there's, you know, a level of psychosis along those lines. Psychosis is postpartum psychosis is like 1 to 2 cases out of every 1,000, whereas you're dealing with about 10% of women do struggle with postpartum depression. Sometimes it's postpartum anxiety, and for obvious reasons, in the fact that I think, you know, as we think about it, yes, we're guys on the podcast. We all of us collectively have 13 kids. We've seen this. We've been around kids. You know, like our wives. We've seen them come through these things, and so much of postpartum, you are hormonally way off because your hormones are trying to get balanced after, you know, this birthing experience. You're getting very little sleep. You now have an entire child that is dependent on you and you alone. The dad can't breastfeed, things like that. Like, this kid and their life and their soul is dependent upon you. So the weight of responsibility, I think, like, yeah, you can know that going into it, but there's something about seeing the kid look in your eyes is like, man, this is mine. And if I don't feed this kid starves to death type of thing. And so I think that then the weight of responsibility is huge. So often a lot of moms don't have a ton of support. Now, this does not mean that it's the husband's fault, you know, and I saw some people pushing that maybe it's the husband's fault for this, which is ridiculous. But I also know in the cases that I deal with, a lot of times it's isolation. They're not getting a lot of sunlight. They're not getting any time to go outside to get some fresh air. They're not feeling very supported in being in their motherhood. And so they're struggling. They got a lot of questions about things, about how this works. And so when they don't feel supported, Joe, they feel very isolated. That leads toward depression.
Can I ask you real fast, just because I'm unfamiliar with kind of how the statistics work? is this something that normally does show up with a first child or maybe a second? Like, it was interesting that, you know, from everything I read, that Lindsay really struggled going for like with the third kid. Like, she obviously had a 5-year-old, she had a 3-year-old. Like, what have you seen as far as, you know, you would think somebody, again, just logically, who's gone through one kid, then two kids, then three kids, like, that it would kind of smooth itself out.
Maybe more prepared for it, yeah.
More prepared,
I don't know I don't know the statistics on it, but I've worked with people where, you know, it doesn't matter if it's their fifth kid. It really depends on what they're going through at the time. It depends on, you know, hormonally, how things were, how difficult was the birth, how much, because there is a level of trauma going through that if you are having an emergency C-section, for instance. Like, my mother-in-law almost bled out and died. Like, you know, very traumatic type things that take place. So that leads toward some of these thoughts as well. The psychosis, though, is pretty rare. That does not happen very often at all. And to me, to plead insanity, actually, Matt Walsh, he's been all over this case, and he takes some pretty strong stances. I happen to agree with, you know, what he's saying. But one of the things he said is the insanity piece to it. It's really difficult for this case specifically, you know, to say an insanity plea, because that is her being perfectly fine, stepping into insanity, and perfectly fine on the back end, which is not really what that plea is for, because anybody could use that. But as far as it goes with mothers struggling with it, we're very mindful of that. And we want to be very compassionate toward the moms who are struggling with a lot of suicidal thoughts, a lot of difficult thoughts. I know there are people out there who, you know, think about harming the children. And my struggle with this case is, yeah, she sought some help, but man, you don't stop seeking help. If that's on the table at all, if that's something that you're considering, you do not stop seeking help. Like, you need to move in with your parents or with somebody else and get away from the kids for a time until you've come through it, because we take it that seriously, because things like this can go wrong and can happen if taken to the very furthest extent, God forbid, in most cases, you know, but it happened here. And I think that is on her for not consistently seeking the help that she should have.
The idea that I'm not in control of myself, therefore I shouldn't be put away. Like, no, that's what you should be put away. Like, you should go to jail. Like, that's just crazy to think. Yeah, let's let somebody out on the street who we're not sure if she's in. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's the justice angle of this, with acknowledging the difficulty of this, but also, hey, this is a crime, and I think that part is just totally getting lost.
Well, that's the key, and that's what's, you know, frustrating about how the, from my perspective, from everything I'm reading, what the discourse has been turned into is basically a referendum on postpartum depression. And kind of the take that I've always had with this, that doesn't seem to be that hot of a take, is you can absolutely raise your hand and say, I absolutely believe in, first of all, that postpartum depression is absolutely, obviously it's real, that there are a lot of women that struggle with it, that it is extremely difficult. And I cannot imagine being, you know, going through that as a woman. And I'm also going to raise my hand and say, anybody who kills their 3 children in, because I didn't even describe in the brutal way that she did. And I don't want our listeners to have to picture or imagine the horror that these kids are my kids' ages, almost exactly. Like, the oldest was 5. My oldest is about to turn 5. I had a 3-year-old. I have a 3-year-old. Kid was 8 months. I got a 14-month-old. Like, and so this hits a little closer to home, I guess, maybe for me, as I'm sure it does for a lot of our listeners. Like, I find myself frustrated in the discourse that, you know, somebody who stands up and says this woman brutally murdered her 3 children, therefore she should be held accountable for it. People are equating that with essentially an attack on postpartum depression. That's just not the case. Like, you don't, conflating those two things is not the answer here. And so obviously all of us here are on the same page that can't be a pass for something like this. Yeah, I don't know, Joe, if you have any more thoughts to add to that, but that's kind of been my frustration with the discourse of it up to this point. And I've tried to listen to some of Matt Walsh's stuff as well, and I think he's making a lot of good points. I think he has, unfortunately, some of his discourse has turned it into a postpartum debate, which it's like, guys, we're not here to debate that. What we're here to talk about is this woman who murdered her 3 children.
Right, because I think he had a take that I do disagree with, where it's like a lot of postpartum, or basically, like, if you're struggling with postpartum, he had something along the lines of, you're selfish. Like, it's just selfishness.
It's due to selfishness, right, yeah.
That's too bombastic. Can there be a level of selfishness in it? No doubt. On the other hand, a lot of it, once again, like, depression's rooted in loneliness. And it is very lonely and isolating to have a kid and all the things that you had before and whatever. And even if it's on the 3rd, 4th, 5th kid, it doesn't matter. It can be an isolating thing. If you're struggling with it, make sure you're getting yourself some help. Get to a good therapist. Talk through your problems and make sure that you're not isolated. Make sure you're talking with people, because depression is rooted in loneliness. And I think there's a level of looking to get yourself out of it. On the other hand, because I want to ask you guys this, at what point do we get past using these things as crutches? I think, I'm trying to figure out how I want to phrase that, but even the insanity, you see words like trauma thrown around, abuse thrown around. We see these things as we talk about it. I'm in the mental health field. I hear these things all the time, some of which are very legitimate, some of which I would look at and go, man, I don't think that qualifies at all. But it's these blanket passes, these blanket statements. It's like, well, I've experienced abuse, therefore I can treat you however I want. Or, well, I'm going through trauma work and therefore I can do whatever. Like, I don't think it's a blanket pass on these things. Same thing with the insanity, the postpartum psychosis. Like, what do we do with that? And specifically, when we think about it in the church realm, how do we help show up for people with a level of sympathy while also not giving passes for things like this?
This is one of those that I don't want to like get ahead of the outline, but this would never go the other way around. Like, there are men who snap, you know, like mentally, they just go and they, you know, sadly murder their whole family or something like that. Nobody goes, well, man, he was going through a lot. It's like, man, it's terrible.
He's going through a lot. But, to support him.
Yeah. And people making, you know, videos going, he could have been me. Like, no. That's not how we're doing this. And so, but again, well, there's going to be more to say about that later. As far as, again, it's not an excuse. And so you have to get that out of the way, first of all, is like, this does not excuse anything. And so the other thing about it is, even dwelling on it, you might say, well, it doesn't excuse it, but we need to have empathy for the woman or whatever. We have to be very careful with this. Somebody had a great post about what a lot of women are seeing is sympathy, glorification, glamorization, an outpouring of support.
A lot of attention.
Attention and support for doing this. We saw this with the school shootings where the copycat was something that happened. It's like, oh, that's a way to like become a legend. I'm going to go do that. You don't want to incentivize that. You want it to be like, this is horrific. It's bad that this happened. It's bad that she was struggling with stuff that contributed to this, but also the woman is a monster. Like, this is something a monster does, because if a man did this, we'd say he was a monster. There are guys that have done this. There's a professional wrestler guy that did it. I mean, like, that's how he's remembered. It's very bad. It's unfortunate, but it's not an excuse.
I've made this point before, I think, on for other topics. We have to live in a world, ideally, where you are held accountable for actions. That's the society that we have to live in, is that if you do X, Y, or Z, if you commit this act, do this, you will be held accountable for it. And the society that we do have right now, unfortunately, is, okay, you'll be held accountable for it unless this loophole is found, unless in the insanity, or unless this or that or the other thing. And obviously, a case like this is the most extreme nature of that. But Joe, you brought up kind of the parallel with like church behavior and things like that. Very similarly, we've got to make sure people understand. And I think in raising kids that I brought this up before, is like, I want my kids to know, you can't just say anything and not expect for there to be consequences for it. If I operate the Chick-fil-A here in Spring Hill. If one of our team members slips up and curses, they're terminated. Like, no matter if they, you know, like, oh, moment of weakness, like, you're terminated. You can't curse under any circumstance. Consequence for an action, even if it was, man, they were having a really bad day, or man, a guest was just being really rude to them. It's like, sorry, you literally can't do that. And right now, I feel like and Joe, this is, again, this is your field. This is something that I think you can speak to the best. I think the mental health industry, while there are plenty of legitimate parts of it, there's a lot of great work that gets done by people like you. I think it's created a lot of, call it caveats, a lot of blanket passes, as you put it, for behavior that is not right. And obviously, that's not always going to result in a case like this. But again, I'm talking about day-to-day life, the way you treat people, the way you respect people. Again, in church, you know, again, just literally interactions with people. Poor behavior, unchrist-like behavior, can kind of get pushed under the rug under the guise of mental health struggles, under the guise of, you know, whatever it is, and consequences for actions has been taken away.
In depth, but easy to understand. That's how war in heaven, war on earth, what the book of Revelation meant to the original readers, and what it means for us today has been described. An Amazon reviewer said it was the best commentary on Revelation he had read in 50 years. Bradley Cobb spent literally thousands of hours researching and putting together this material, showing how first century Christians, the ones the book was written to, would have understood the book, how it matches with the rest of the Bible, and how it was something that was about to happen when John wrote it. Thoroughly biblical in his approach, including the dating of the book, and supported with first century history, this 550-page book does not gloss over any details and includes points of application throughout each of the book's 48 studies. Great for personal study or for a year-long Bible class. Available on Amazon.com in hardcover, paperback, or Kindle.
This is a little bit later in what some we were going to discuss. I don't know if we can just bring it in now.
Go for it.
We make, this is critical theory, we make everybody a victim. This is what I really hate about, not everybody. Sorry, you're right, not everybody. We make ourselves and the victim class, which is critical theory. There is a level of power, the power struggle of there's the victims, and that's anybody that's put down, anybody put upon, the LGBTQ movement. BLM movement, obviously, was talking about that. And it's all based on critical theory. Not critical race theory, that's a part of it. It's more than that. It's this power dynamic and power struggle between the oppressed and the oppressors. Modern mental health, I hate my profession in a lot of ways. I love it. I love working with people. I love people. But I hate the profession and what it's done, which is it's turned a lot of people into victims. And so the way that they look at it is they will over-identify with traumas.
And not just victims, Joe, perpetual victims. Like, right. It just never ends.
Like, they're not looking to get out. Because some people are the victims, genuinely. They are victimized. They have been through a lot. I'm not discounting that in the least. But it's how we choose to reframe the discussion as to whether we are going to perpetually stay victims or whether we're going to be able to work out of it. And to me, that's what you see here is, you know, this oppressed terminology, you know what? She's basically the systems against her type of thing, and it could be Me Too, and so it's almost a Me Too movement type thing, where everybody's looking to figure out where they fit in this entire story and whatnot, and you see this with a lot of women. They got stories postpartum, so they're trying to shoehorn in there and to fit into this oppressed class of like, man, I've been there too, and I struggle too, and it's like, I get that, and I know women struggle. I know that men struggle with certain things too. But what are we choosing to identify with? And I think mental health pushes a lot of people into being lifelong strugglers. This is why I'm also very against pharmaceuticals. In extreme cases, sure, maybe 5% of actual
which
cases.
Which that's a big
should
angle
we use
of this
pharmaceuticals?
Actual, right.
And that's a huge
well.
Angle of this.
Yeah.
She's on pharmaceuticals. They didn't work. As a matter of fact, they made problems worse, you know, what she was taking. I think it was Seroquel or something like that, where she took it and it made the problem a lot worse. She was trying to fix insomnia and it just adds on these problems. Well, the pharmaceutical companies, I don't want to go conspiracy theory here, you know, theorist here, but I don't think they have any desire to really heal you. I don't think the goal is to get you on and get you off quickly. Most people that are on them for years, if not basically planning to be there for life. Well, how many in the mental health field are very quick to diagnose? I don't diagnose for a reason. They're very quick to diagnose, and they're very quick to try to get you on something to stabilize you. Well, stabilization should take a matter of a month, two, maybe before you start to taper off until we can get you in a better place. These people end up being on it for years. She was as well, where she's on all these medications. She basically becomes a human test tube. We're just going to try these different things. Let's throw this in there and
that's
see.
That's what I was going to say.
Disaster.
Is it's... Oh, well, let's try this one. Let's give you a bigger dose. Let's give you a lesser dose. Let's throw this one on there. Let's throw this. It's so trial and error with every individual person that comes in. And I mean, and it's all based on the serotonin theory, which is debunked. I mean, like, it's not, it's all bad science. And this is just all they do is just throw this at people. And that was a significant contributing factor. I mean, you think about how many mass murderers, how many like cases like this have some of those pills involved? And we're not saying that everybody who's on that is going to do that. We're just saying this gets dangerous. Bad things happen with these. And the doctors, the pharmaceutical profession are very haphazard with the way they just throw these things around. And that is a factor in this as well.
We've had that take place where, you know, a close friend of ours that by the grace of God, it did not work, but suicidal attempt, and it was surrounding these where, whoops, we crossed the medication and, you know, man, bummer type of thing. Like, we're playing with people's lives. And this is where the mental health field, it turns people into perpetual victims where they don't feel they can get out of it. They over-identify with their traumas and their abuses and the things that they have been victimized in. They over-identify and it becomes a sort of strength. This is the intersectionality of critical theory. It becomes a sort of strength to over-identify with the things that make you weak.
The more
so
things
any
you can add to your repertoire,
correct.
Basically. Yeah.
So, you know, the And I'm sorry, but like the overweight community has some of that where it's the intersectionality. You don't know what it's like. There's obviously with race, there's certain communities along those lines. With gender, there's a certain thing. And so it's like if you were trans and, you know, maybe...
Basically, how many minorities do you fall into?
Correct. And so you end up getting to the top of the food chain because you have so many things working against you. And postpartum does fall somewhere on there when we over-identify with that. And it becomes like, yeah, that's my story too. Like, we're not looking to identify with all of our traumas. We're looking to process through those things and get to the other side. But this is what takes place in the mental health industry that's pushing us in a critical race theory or in a critical theory world, rather.
So, Joe, obviously this is not an interview where we're just asking you a bunch of questions. Sure. But I am curious your thought to the question that you asked us, which is take it from a church perspective. How do we show care towards those who, you know, maybe are the victims, like you said, like people who genuinely have gone through trauma and there's just, man, a lot they have to deal with, while also not giving a pass, while staying grounded, while not kind of excusing behavior? Like, do you have any just quick thoughts on kind of how those of us in the church can support those who, again, have gone through stuff like this?
The reason it's important to know backgrounds for people is to be able to feel sympathy for them. I mean, you have been through a lot. That's really, really difficult. Doesn't justify this. We can't do that. I work with porn addicts for a living. I can't justify their porn use and go, well, you're perfectly fine. Do I know why they do what they do? Yeah, you know, sexual trauma or emotional abuse or whatever it may be that leads them towards seeking something to regulate them, porn. That doesn't justify pornography. That doesn't justify sexual acting out or any of the other things that I deal with. On the other hand, I can feel really bad for you and understand, man, you've come through a lot, but we've been saved from this. We are moving in a different direction. We are not going to do those things. And so in the church, the way we show up for people is understand their stories, connect with people, listen to them and go, man, you have been through a significant amount. Because of that, we are called to more. We're called to get out of these things and to not just slip into old patterns, into bad behaviors. We have been saved from these things. And there's a beauty in that that allows us to reach a higher standard when we've come through it. So it starts with the sympathy and understanding where people are coming from. But then we can call them out of that really by using the same thing. Like, you've been through a lot. Let's not stay there. Let's get out of this and get to a different place.
That's something Will had a good note in here about Saul, you know, the distressful spirit, the spirit overtaking him and him trying to kill David. That we don't go, oh, well, I mean, he had the spirit, so obviously Saul's okay.
That could have been me.
Right? Yeah, right. And so, I mean, you see it in a moment like that. Like, yeah, that's not good, but it's, again, it's not a pass. I think, though, and we've kind of hit around some of this, why the postpartum depression thing isn't as interesting to me as, yeah, it's real, it's all these things. As we said, it's not an excuse. I think a lot of people are hiding behind that because what you're seeing them do is go, it was postpartum depression, it was the pharmaceuticals, it was the lack of a support system. Maybe her husband even did it. Maybe her husband abused her and caused her to do it. Maybe, like, just no accountability across the board. That's right, what it is. And so postpartum depression is just one of the vehicles servings that they can choose from of whatever it is. It's just not her fault. The society failed her. Everybody failed.
It's just so appalling to me when you consider the details of the case. Like, this is just read what happened. Like, it is one of those things. As I was talking to my wife a little bit about it, she's followed it somewhat. She's usually not following the news at all, but this is something that I guess caught her attention a little bit. And she was a little bit worried about us recording this episode. Like, man, you know, hope that, you know, y'all don't step into much controversy. And part of me was like, what's controversial about this? Like, as far as the actual facts of the case, like, again, we're not having a postpartum debate. We're having a discussion about a woman who brutally murdered her three children. And so that's where, once again, as we've kind of hit around it plenty, I did put 1 Samuel 16 and chapter 18 on the outline here. As I was trying to comb through and think, like, man, are there any examples of, you know, stuff like this in the Bible of, like, insanity or people being out of their mind? Saul was the best one that came to mind. Yeah, he absolutely was still held accountable. That is not portrayed in 1 Samuel as a sympathetic story, as a, oh man, poor Saul, poor guy, he's just really going through a lot. Like, no, he tried to kill the man after God's own heart. And so that's the, once again, challenging thing about this entire case, is that it's kind of gotten distorted from what it actually is.
Well, until they know accountability.
I was going to go to the accountability thing too, so go ahead.
No, just when you get to the no accountability, I'm sure you guys have seen. I've seen this, the throwing the ice, you know, where these women are like screaming. I'm sure you've also seen the rage camps or whatever, where like there's these retreats where they go and just rage out, scream and scream and scream. And it's just this attempt to kind of get out this internal rage that's been building.
And when I see the throwing the ice as well. That's the throwing the ice. Everyone's seen that.
Women going through postpartum, I think the ones I've seen are postpartum. I don't know if there's outside that realm. They grab a bowl of ice and they go into their bathroom and they just chuck it and scream and you know,
they set their phone camera up to show themselves doing it. Yeah,
to show themselves.
I have
doing
not
it.
Seen and, any and then of this.
Oh, you
this
haven't? Yeah, not we're seen oh, viral yeah, today. It's like, yeah, we understand, Lindsay. This is what we do to get through postpartum depression and things like that. And yeah, it's raging out in the bathroom, throwing ice so you don't go beat up your kids or something like that. It's like, this is not healthy. And the fact that you set your phone up to capture you doing
it's
this is like, yeah,
but
it's
that's performative.
It's premeditated.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, this is nuts. This is, sorry, I took your point there, Joe.
No, you're good. You're good. And, well, did you guys see, I also was reading something about, have you heard about the Miletus suicides?
Yes.
Have you ever heard about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. No. Going back to, I think, was it 300 AD, somewhere around there. And
this is not going to be popular.
But a town of Greece, and unfortunately, there was a popular young female who committed suicide. Very sad situation. Got a ton of, basically, press. Like, a lot of people that it kind of got her noticed. It's 21 Pilots, Neon Gravestones actually came to my mind of people that kind of do this for show. You know, the committing suicide. Anyway, they ended up having a string, and people are sociologists and such, they look back and historians and they're like, man, what really caused it? And what seems to have been the case is it was all these young females committing suicide, and it was them following after kind of the trend of the day. And no matter how much their families loved them and pleaded with them and tried to help them and take care of them, it just continued to happen until somebody, basically the king or the ruler of the, you know, of Miletus said, the next one that does it is going to be, we're going to, yeah, basically hang it up and you know, without any clothes, and it's going to be a humiliation ritual, basically a humiliation thing. And
so it was no longer glamorous.
Yeah. It was no longer glamorous. He took the glamorized nature of it. I bring that up. It's a tough story, but I bring that up to say there's a glamorized nature to the raging out, to all of these things, that allows for them to not necessarily have to take. And I'm not just talking postpartum. When we see women that are really leaning into it, it is with the intention of like, I'm allowed to get away with basically throwing a tantrum, even all the way to the point of killing my three kids because I'm really struggling right now. And that's the danger of this.
We can't live in a world where that's a sentence, right?
Right. And we have to bring back accountability, personal accountability. And where we cross this into the church is that we in the church, and especially us as the leaders of the church, you know, the guys of the church, the guys that are elders and preachers and people like that, we have to be leading the charge on taking accountability, being open with our own struggles to some degree, you know, and taking accountability wherever we can to say, man, we've really messed this one up and we want to get this right. And if we are struggling, letting people know that, hey, everybody struggles, but we got to be doing something about that. So I think we need church leadership to set this stage for, we take accountability for ourselves, for our actions, for our emotions. You may struggle with a tough day. It also goes to parenting. Parents need to teach their kids, it's okay to be angry. You can't hit your sibling. You can't scream. You can't take a tantrum in the store, which is gentle parenting. It's all wrapped into one. We hate gentle parenting because you see the six-year-old melting down in the store.
There are consequences
for those
actions, okay. There should be.
Correct. And it's like, it's not okay. It's not okay. But what it would take is to be able to set it aside and to deal with the problem at hand and to lead by example, saying that's not what we do here, creating a culture where that doesn't take place and where we don't reward these actions.
See, you mentioned a bit earlier the critical theory, oppressed oppressor thing, that dynamic, the framework that everyone's operating on. And churches, Christians, tons of them use this unknowingly, have just adopted it because it's what is saturated the culture. This goes all the way back to O.J. Simpson in the 90s. He got off and people celebrated because, like, that's one for our team. And the same thing happened last year with Carmelo Anthony, with the guy, he stabbed the young man. That they were both high schoolers, I think, in Texas. And same thing, GoFundMe, all kinds of money flowing in to the guy and his family, basically saying, you know, for our team. We're taking, you're standing for our team. And it's like, this is awful, but they can do no wrong because in those cases it was black versus white and they are the oppressed, and so they're owed this one. And you see this with women. They are oppressed, so they are owed this. And I saw a post about this today. It was talking about men and women, the dynamic in relationships, headship and submission, all that. And it was that, well, if he does his job, then she'll... No. You have accountability too. You have a role, but you even... You know, when people go to exegete Ephesians 5, well, it says she has to submit. Well, if he does a good job loving her like Christ loves the church, then she'll submit. No. You have a role here, but it critical theory, oppressed-oppressor dynamics, basically makes it to where all the responsibility is on the other person. And so when something like this happens, they go, what did the husband do? Like, no. That's, what are you doing? But that's how you get here.
Well, another angle of that is you've got on here kind of the sympathetic villain trope. How much do we see that in our entertainment? You know, for Hollywood and movies, if they're not firing up a sequel or a remake of something, it's like a villain origin story, basically. It's the Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix.
So we can sympathize with him.
Right. So, well, let me show you his background. It's obviously Maleficent is a very well-known one. Or I think there was a Cruella de Vil movie. Like, this is something over the last really 10 years or maybe 15 years, I would say, that is becoming more popular and that is being – I heard a story the other day about somebody who's like, I don't really watch anything from the 21st century because I don't want the propaganda. It's like, I get it. Understand. Because that's the kind of subtle programming that they're feeding a lot of these young kids that like those type of movies is like, see the bad guy, like the Joker, who's one of the worst villains of all time – see, this explains why he is the way that he is. And I know that's Hollywood and that's not, you know, anything real that what we're talking about, but it's what we're talking about here played out on the entertainment stage, you know, again, on a screen for kids to kind of process. Oh, so maybe, man, I guess Joker was kind of justified for what he did or again, you know, whatever it is, that's a serious problem. And so that's one of those things that it's important for us to make sure once again, that we, and Joe, I think you do a great job of this in your therapy, from what I understand, is, yeah, let's absolutely acknowledge what you went through as a child. Let's absolutely acknowledge your trauma. Let's talk about the emotional abuse that you suffered. Let's work through all those things. You still can't do X, Y, and Z. You still can't be a pornography addict. You still can't, you know, like working your way out of those things is still what absolutely has to happen, regardless of kind of the background of it. And so that's where, yeah, the perpetual victim thing is just so frustrating.
I'm also going to say this, and this is going to be very mean. I also blame a lot of pulpits for softening on sin, for not preaching. We talk about the hellfire and brimstone. Look, grace is very important. I think they overdid it in the hellfire and brimstone days where everybody thought they were stepping out of heaven every single time they you know, did one bad thing. I think there's a lot of problems that go along with hellfire and brimstone. But the squishiness that we've gotten to today where we can give a pass to sin, that's why we can have an origin story in this country, you know, for a villain. And everybody's, oh, that's great. That's great. It's you know, we can sympathize with them. We can empathize. We've been there ourselves. And who's to say we could be that? That's exactly
what's
taking place with this case.
We're all just broken sinners. Yeah.
Correct. We're all just broken sinners. Those types of terminologies and things that we use, that preachers use from the pulpit, that you hear preached and proclaimed, in my opinion, it normalizes sin. It's like, man, we're talking about serving the Almighty God that cannot look upon sin, that was willing to send his own son to the cross, nailed to a tree, coming down, leaving the glories of heaven because of the sin that we commit. And we just, you know, flap these things and go out there and who cares? You know, who cares? We can have these, it goes the same thing with the true crime podcasts and all of these other things that people get involved in and listen to and we just get fascinated by these stories, and I think we become so desensitized to sin, to problems, that we are looking now, Will, to your point, we're looking more as to how can we over-identify with the sin, not just the sinner, but with the sin itself, because we read ourselves into all of these situations, and that's what you get with we're all broken sinners. Well, she's just like us. Like, no, she's not. She killed her 3 kids. I didn't make that decision, nor am I going to, nor did my wife make that decision when she struggled to some degree. Like, that just didn't happen because we made different decisions, but we can't have a conversation about sins and decisions because, again, I think we've gone really soft and really squishy on all these things to the point that we say, well, who's to say? Who am I to judge? Who am I to say these things? All I know is that I've been there myself, and therefore that must give a pass to these things. And that, our culture is inundated with this stuff, and it's sickening.
Hey, folks, I wanted to tell you about our new Christian book combo. It's two books available at focuspress.org. The first is Sunday School Catch-Up. It's 150 Bible basics for those that maybe didn't grow up in the church or feel like they're lacking in the fundamentals of the Bible. And then Starting Line by Dr. Brad Harab, and, of course, by Will on that one as well, on the basics of the Christian life, of what it means to be a Christian, to be part of the church, why the church does what it does, some doctrinal basics and things like that. And so with those two books, we've got them at a discount on our site when you buy them together. A great starter pack for anyone who wants to know more about the Christian faith. So check that out today at focuspress.org. Well, you've seen the same thing with the pro-life thing, when a lot of the pro-life leader, in fact, one of them tweeted her support for the lady, one of the big pro-life account ladies on Twitter, kind of came to, it was empathizing or whatever with Lindsey Clancy. But when people have suggested, hey, we should also prosecute, you know, not just abortion doctors, but women who go seeking abortion. Whoa, no, we can't do that. Like, they're trying to have their kid killed, okay?
It's
like, we're separating them from the sin, and the abortion doctor, he's the wicked one, we should send them to jail. But the person, the woman who pays him to do it, you know, the hitman is bad, but the guy who hired the hitman, yeah, but it's, again, it goes back to this. Well, she couldn't possibly. She only does it because she's a victim. Like, no. There's agency here. We got a great comment. I want to go to something you talked about there, Joe, about people's obsession with these things and kind of looking into the darkness a little bit. But Todd, we appreciate the comment. He said, this is very much similar to what Joe was saying here. We're very much in agreement. He said, we've swung the pendulum too far. We went from never talk about your struggles to be proud that you have struggles and use them to justify all your behavior. Mental health and mental health resources should lead people to the cross, not away from it. The answer has always been and will always be more of Jesus, not less. Many of these issues are contributed to the desensitization to violence, crime, and sin in our culture. Let's course correct proactively versus reactively. So appreciate the comment. It's kind of funny. Joe didn't see that. As it came in as Joe was saying that. You're very much on the same page there. It is about the cross, and this is getting us away from that. But I mentioned I wanted to go this other direction with it. There's that, is it Nietzsche, whoever said the quote about when you stare into the abyss, it starts to stare right back. Like you're looking at darkness all the time, and darkness, it just, like, there's this weird relationship that starts happening.
Becomes your friend, yeah.
Yeah, and you start being molded by it. All of the women who are obsessing over this and watching frame by frame, case by case, a million TikToks about this case, and true crime podcasts have been the big thing for years. And there's the Candace Owens thing where every day you go to figure out what, you know, time traveler killed Charlie Kirk thing. Like, this is not good for anybody. This isn't healthy. This is not natural. This is not normal. This is something that I think we need to talk about as part of this as well, is, I don't know, I guess the question I would ask you guys is, what counsel would you give to someone who's kind of interested in these things? They're going to say, no, it's fine, it's not. Would you say, hey, stay, just back off from it entirely? What would you say to it?
This is very, I'll go first as the non-resident therapist. Man, this one is a tough one because there's so many varying degrees to it. There are people who are, I think there's always going to be a somewhat of a human fascination with stuff like this. Like, and I think part of it is like, did this actually happen? Like, it feels like it's a fictional story, but it's not. And so that's, I mean, fictional stories are fascinating because it's a story that's made up, and it's like, oh man, I can't, but these are real life things. And so I think there will always be a level of, can you believe that that actually happened? Can you, I mean, you remember the, I mean, there's just a million different examples we could list of stuff like this that just absolutely captivate people's attention. I think my counsel would be, man, if this is your main genre of interest, that's kind of all, you know, whether it be books and podcasts and YouTube videos, and that's kind of your thing, I would encourage you to probably back off of that some. I'm not in the, you got to completely abstain from it camp. I think there are, again, whether it's, you know, a book here and there, things like that, you got to be real careful. I mean, there's a million and one crime shows, you know, true crime shows, Criminal Minds, other stuff like that, that you can just eat up nonstop. Again, books, podcasts, and things like that. And so, you know, you got Philippians 4:8 on here. You know, think on these things. You know, it lists not a lot of things that have to do with, you know, real big fascination on true crime are going to fall into that. And so, Yeah, I would say for those of you, for people who are listening, who again, that's their world and they are just the biggest kind of nerds about it, I think stepping back from that would be wise. In the same way that, you know, if your entire personality consists of, you know, your Harry Potter obsession or something like that, let's back away from that one too. And so, Joe, what thoughts do you have kind of on the true crime? I mean, there are a lot of people who are just fascinated by it. And then there are a lot of people who, once again, it's their world. Like, that's what they live for.
I would agree that there are, you know, anything can become a vice at a time. I suppose sports podcasts can maybe get there as well. Whatever it may be, you know, things maybe we listen to, like,
I little think, little different light and darkness.
Yeah, but exactly. Yeah. But it's different in the fact that, because I could hear people say, well, you know, you could be listening to too much of anything. Yeah, but there's a difference in this one. There's a difference in setting your mind on purposely dark things. Our culture has a fascination with death. Look at Halloween. We have a fascination with death. And I'm convinced it's because we have no appreciation for life. That's why abortion's a big deal. That's why, you know, like, we have no appreciation for life, for what it represents, for what it means, for the sanctity of life, the beauty of life. There are people, obviously, us as Christians are fighting for that. Our culture is of death, decay, destruction. We love those things. We're drawn to it. The true crime on Netflix, those shows. I've watched those too. I'll be the first to admit, yes, I've seen a few of those as well. They're very interesting people stories. I get that. That's why I'm a therapist, is I love people and knowing how people work. And so I can understand how people might get there. Those that are listening saying, I just like the psychology elements to these things. I get it, but you have to consider the darkness that if you are inundated with these things, if you're listening to this all the time, what are you putting in your mind? Because you're right, Jack. I think you start, it's staring into the abyss, and I think it will start to stare back at some point. So what I would encourage for my advice is consider taking a couple weeks, a month off of those, and just see if your perspective shifts, see if your emotion shift, see if your sleep shifts, see almost as a reset. And you know what? If you find, perfectly fine. You know, I kind of miss those and I enjoy those podcasts, but I don't really notice that much of a difference. I'm not a happier person, nothing like that. Then maybe you've got a good relationship with those podcasts and such, that content. By and large, I would avoid them a decent amount, you know, and I would probably encourage people to the best of your ability. I'd look to avoid on a lot of those things just based off of, is this really what we're looking to fill our minds with? And I get it. We're all watching movies and things like that that have death and things. I don't want to be...
You can copy and paste Philippians 4:8 onto a lot of stuff.
Correct. Right? Yeah. Correct. I mean, you could use that to say pretty much don't watch anything. So I want to be not a hypocrite in how I say those things. But there is something very dark about the true crime.
When it's all negative fixation, death, I mean, I don't know. The thing that comes to mind for me, and I had tweeted or posted about this somewhere, but 1 Timothy 5, where Paul is talking about the list for widows and saying don't put younger widows on the list, they need to get married. He says that at the same time they learn to be idle, so they go around from house to house, not merely idle, but also gossips and busybodies, talking about things not proper to mention. Therefore, I want younger widows to get married, bear children, keep house, and give the enemy no occasion for reproach, for some have already turned aside to follow Satan. This is that. They're not going house to house discussing things that shouldn't be mentioned. They're going from reel to reel, from short to, from TikTok to TikTok, you know, scrolling from page to page. That's what this is a gossip fixation, being in other people's business, wanting to be up in the know and, you know, just plugged into the whole thing all the time. It's not healthy. And as he says, the antidote to that is keep the house, get married, have kids, take care of them. Man, and I brought up the Candace Owens, Charlie Kirk thing. Oh, man, they're tracking the Egyptian planes. Like, how many dishes are in your sink? Like, who cares? Like, what does this have to do with your life? Go get the laundry out of the machine and fold it up. Like, this is insanity. What is this doing for you to plug into this every day and be fixated on, oh, we're going to get down to the bottom of the 337th degree of connection of who killed Charlie Kirk? Like, he was a great guy, but this is insane. Like, this is going this far down the rabbit hole, and this woman's case is kind of the same thing of, like, you know, on the trial, the husband, he looked like he was kind of smirking. You know, I saw a video of the body language detector. You know, she's given the body language that he had in the trial.
Matt
and it
Walsh
said
called
that he
him
is,
wannabe Nancy Drews.
Yeah, and I mean, like... Yep. This is, again, there are so many better things you could do with your life. And we all could spend more time in Bible reading and prayer and all that. As you said, there's blanket criticisms, but this is this specific to women the gossip they like getting dragged into and like being in the know and all those things. And it's like, as I think Joe said,
the reverse
of reevaluate.
I would just say the inverse of that is men and politics. Men, oh, yeah, the news stories or like the just every little, you know, rabbit hole that they can go down. It is interesting, kind of the way the gender dynamics break down there with that. I would agree with that. Guys, what else do we want to get into with the remaining few minutes that we have? I mean, we've covered a lot of what we've got on here. The victim portion of this is one that I have the least tolerance for. She's not a victim. The three children that were dead in the basement, those are the victims. Those are the victims here. And again, the way that, whether it be through critical theory or again, like, you know, we're on the same team type of thing, trying to cut, copy, and paste the exact same struggles that people have as a way to justify a lot of this is just what's so disturbing, is the only word that I can come up with on some of this. Once again, I was talking to my wife, like, what is controversial about it? I get that this woman had struggles, but man, it's awful. So sorry, that's not necessarily my closing thoughts, but that's kind of where my mind went with the victim narrative portion.
No, it makes sense. One that we didn't get to that I wanted to mention is when these people are doing the sleuthing thing, okay, asking questions. Oh, it's just asking questions. Okay, but you're impugning a lot of people. You're implicating a lot of people in these things. And you got to be careful with that. The ninth commandment is don't bear false witness. And so when somebody comes to a case like this and goes, you know what? A lot of husbands abuse their wives, and you know, who's to say that might be involved here? Like, you don't know this man from Adam. You don't know a single thing about their home life, and now you're basically implying she killed her kids because he yelled at her? That's bearing false witness. That is a sin, but you've got too much time on your hands, and so you just go ahead and do it and just throw it out there because you can, because no one's holding you accountable for it. You're going to have to hold yourself accountable. Okay, and I'm seeing this with all of these. There was a story about this true crime thing where they dug up this story. It was a murder in Idaho or something like that, and the TikTok sleuths got to work figuring it out and who it was, and this psychic lady, tarot card reader or whatever, told them all, oh, it was this professor at the University of Idaho, and they showed up at his house and all this, and no, it was just wrong. Like, that he wasn't involved at all. Like, he was totally cleared by the police.
Wow.
That's bearing false witness. And no, maybe not everyone does it on that big of a level, but if you're making comments on social media, you're posting things, sharing things of like, oh, what did he do? What was it? That's a sin. And this is the kind of sin that needs to be called out and reined in and said, you got to stop doing this. That's not, A, it's a sin, so it's unhealthy, but B, it's unhealthy in a lot of ways for other people. You're dragging other people into this psychosis. It's awful stuff. And there's just so little accountability for it that, I don't know. I think that something has to be said.
Yeah. I guess I will give my closing thoughts because we lost Joe, it would appear.
Since we're live, I don't think he can hop back in. So
that's right. I would just, two quick things. The first one, as you said, accountability is so important for every phase of life. Young children need to be held accountable for the things that they do. They need to be, you know, shown what accountability is. As we said earlier, like, yeah, you can get angry, you just can't hit your sister. Things like that. And so that is, we've got to make sure that we don't nullify consequences, you know, when behavior is committed in a certain way, as I've already said that. The only other thought that I'll share just from a application to the church standpoint is, it's interesting how much this somewhat ties into last week's episode, talking about vulnerability and authenticity. And what was clear from a lot of this woman's life is, yes, she was dealing with a lot of stuff, and yes, she had people in her life, but man, did she feel like there was nobody to go to, essentially. That is something that I would just encourage everybody. Go back and listen to that episode last week about being vulnerable, being authentic. We don't want to be the perpetual victims, the always broken people, but man, this is stuff that I would hope and pray our church families are equipped to handle if a woman is really dealing with something as serious as postpartum depression, maybe even postpartum psychosis, as rare as it is. I would want to, again, just reinforce, like, we have to make sure that our congregation's culture or cultivate an atmosphere where there's one or two, you know, groups of people that a woman can feel comfortable going to and sharing some of these struggles, obviously, and her husband as well. But yeah, it's a recipe for disaster when, you know, people, man or woman, going through any kind of struggle, looks around, it's like, there is not really anybody for me to go to about this. That's when things can get really difficult. Wish Joe was here. He could obviously speak a little bit better to that. But that's kind of, yeah, that's my last thought is, once again, as it goes to last week, be authentic, be vulnerable, willing to share your struggles, and be somebody who is open to hearing how somebody is actually doing and not just expecting the, yeah, I'm doing fine answer when you ask them how they're doing. So just kind of tie in last week.
Yeah, go home and pray about it and things like that. That's not a great answer to when somebody's really struggling. You know, we just had our newborn twins, and the amount of support we've gotten from family first, but from neighbors and from the church family, it has just been incredible. How many people ask and checking in on us, bringing a meal, things like that. That is the blessing of a church family. And I understand not every church family is like that. Try to be more like that, especially leaders set up churches to be that way. And then on top of that, if you're not a leader, act that way toward others. But to those, maybe you're not a Christian. Maybe you're coming across this. Church families are a really nice thing to have. It's not the only reason you convert. You convert because Jesus is Lord, but it is a really nice perk is to have a support system. And so we should be that for each other as well. My closing thought, since that one was just tacking on to Will's closing thought, mine is evaluate the world through the truth, not through this, well, were they a victim, a class, therefore they get a pass, therefore it's okay. No.
Like, turn that lens off.
It's wrong if anybody does it. And so don't go looking for somebody else to blame. The first thing we say is, wow, it's really bad that a woman murdered her children. There are a million other considerations, but if the first thing you're doing is going, how can I keep her from being accountable, we're losing the plot here. And that kind of stuff has to stop if we're going to be people who speak the truth. So, very difficult, not fun thing to talk about. Lots of different angles. We didn't get to all the angles. I'm sure there are other thoughts people might have. We appreciate those who have tuned in on a late Wednesday night for the live. If you're not watching the live, these are all up on the YouTube channel for Focus Press. They go out on the podcast app. We have this show we do every single week. So be sure you're subscribed on YouTube, on the podcast app, and join us on our Patreon, focuspress.org/plus. For the extra episode we do every week, answering listener questions and just extending the discussion. So be sure to check that out. And thanks again for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys on the next one. Hey guys, Jack Wilkie here. If you enjoy our work with podcasts like Think Deeper and Godly Young Men and our books, articles, seminars, and want to support the work that we do, the best way to do so is to go to focuspress.org/donate. That's focuspress.org/donate. Thanks again for listening.